I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, in advance of Friday's Women, Wisdom, and Wellness Conference, we're going to talk about women's health. We're going to talk about what it takes for women to stay fit, healthy, and happy, and what habits to avoid that might keep women from reaching their goals. I'll be joined by three guests: Katie Jones of the Indiana State Board of Health, Julie Schneiders, a St. Vincent nurse practitioner, and Julie Petter of the American Heart Association. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about women's health. This is in advance of the Women, Wisdom, and Wellness Conference this Friday. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I have three great guests with me today, including two Julies, so I'll have to be careful and call them by last name. Julie Schneiders, who is a St. Vincent nurse practitioner, is going to be speaking at the conference as well. Julie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you here. Katie Jane Jones, I'm sorry. My daughter has a friend named Katie Jane. Katie Jones, Indiana State Department of Health. Katie, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. And it's funny, we were just talking about how my name was the simplest one.
I know, and I screwed it up. And Julie Petter of the American Heart Association. Julie, welcome to the program.
Thanks also for having me.
Certainly.
It's a pleasure.
It's good to have you here. Well, Julie Schneiders, how about if you tell us just a little bit about what the conference is, what its focuses are, and maybe if people want to get involved, how they go about doing that. I know the ticket sales close tomorrow. So
right. WFYI, in partnership with Anthem, St. Vincent puts on a wonderful conference every year for women called Women's Wisdom and Wellness. This year, the focus is on heart health. But it's just a day for women to come down and take care of themselves. There are breakout sessions on every topic that they could possibly want to know. We have a luncheon speaker. Her name is Linda Larson, and she's talking about that woman that is out there that is thinking that they are the superhero and have to do everything. So it's really just a wonderful day. It's downtown at the JW Marriott. If anybody's interested, there are tickets still for sale right now.
And where would people go to get them?
They can go to WFYI and get those tickets be set to go.
Just go to our site, www.wfyi.org. Well, let's now talk a little bit about the larger issue, really, of women's health. And let's start a little bit with what the big risks are. What we see now are the prevalent challenges for women dealing with their health. Katie Jones.
Well, sure. I think that at the Department of Health, some of the ones that we're focusing on a lot are obesity and overweight, smoking and smoking cessation and prevention, making sure that women are taking care of themselves holistically, preconception, interconception, and then throughout their life course, really making sure that they're eating healthy, getting the proper amount of exercise, taking care of their mental health and stress levels. Really, those are kind of the areas that we're focusing on is how to be healthy overall.
Well, Julie Petter, the perception used to be a long, long time ago, that, you know, women had, on average, longer life expectancies than men. And that generally they did not have the same risk level when it came to heart attacks and other heart disease. That's begun to change over the years. Could you talk a little bit about that, what might be producing it, and what the risks are for women in regard to heart disease?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. There is that perception that heart disease is a man's disease, and really nothing could be further from the truth. One in three women lives are taken from heart disease. It's the number one killer of women. But the perception is that really cancer is what most women think is the biggest risk to their health. And while, you know, cancer takes one in 31 women, heart disease takes one in three. So that the perception is that
has it always been that way, or have those numbers shifted in recent years?
Since 1984, more women have died from heart disease than men. So the Heart Association realized about 10 years ago the numbers were just continuing to grow and get worse, and the gap was widening. So that's where the Go Red for Women movement really was started, was to try to put some emphasis and research on women and try to raise awareness about the signs and symptoms.
So to some degree, it's the opposite of the old perception that a heart attack was something that a man had to worry about, but not necessarily a woman. What accounts for that? I saw, Julie Schneiders, I saw you nodding your head here, so...
You know what I think? I think that there is, we know now that it is not just a man's disease. Women used to show up into the emergency room and they do have different symptoms of heart, if they're actually having a heart attack, than men, which we probably need to talk about.
Yeah, maybe right now, since people what the symptoms are. Yeah, since
you know, you always hear, you know, chest pain, I feel like an elephant is sitting on my chest, jaw pain. A woman may have every one of those. She may be sweating, nauseous, short of breath, but she also might be just, maybe she'll have shoulder pain. Maybe it'll be in her back. They tend to present atypically. And what I think is happening now, which is a good thing, is that when women come into an emergency room, we are saying, yes, this could be a heart attack, and we're going to rule that out first. Where before it was maybe that we didn't even consider that for women, and now we do, and that's with, you know, the movement like the Go Red, that we've gotten that word out.
We are talking about women's health here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. So it sounds like, and I want to ask a question, actually picking up on that point, the fact that, you know, we're seeing more of this. Julie Schneiders, you said something that, you know, now we're checking for it. I mean, is it a case now where just more women are having heart attacks, or was it underreported 30, 40, 50 years ago?
I think it might have been underreported. I do think that we have more obesity and more diabetes out there. Katie mentioned that we're really focusing on obesity, which is a huge risk factor. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, that as we all get older, that becomes more of an issue. For women that are menopausal, their risk of a heart attack equals that of men once they are in their 50s.
So once they get north of the 50 mark,
there
is, they join the club with the rest of us. It's a dubious distinction.
I've joined.
Dubious honor. Yeah. Well, Katie, you talked about how priority is dealing with obesity. First, can you talk a little bit about why that is such a problem, why it's a concern that people are overweight, and then B, you know, what the state is doing about it, and then what individuals should be doing about it?
Sure. Well, I think that obesity and overweight is a problem because it raises our healthcare costs, and it affects the lifestyles that people are able to have. I think that.
How do we define obesity? But that's probably probably a good place.
Sure.
To start.
Overweight and obese is typically based on the body mass index, or BMI, and a normal BMI is 25, and then 25 to 29 is considered overweight, and obese is 30 over.
How do they arrive at 20? What is it, 25? Just out of. How do they calculate? Get to that number?
I'm going
to
need help on this.
I haven't weighed 25 pounds for quite some time.
It's a formula based on its height, over, help me out.
Yeah, it's a whole formula, body mass index. And so that number of 25 is not 25 pounds, it's just your score.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
I was like, who weighs 25 pounds?
No one's
going to hit that standard. But I was trying to get at how people can calculate it. Mm-hmm. If they're, you know, let's say if you're a 5'6" woman who, you know, what weight then?
You're measuring what we do for body mass index. A really rough way is to measure the waist and the hip ratio, and it's the ratio between this measurement around the waist and the measurement around the hips that helps you to calculate that body mass index score. And there's different things that kind of fit into that. And then some of the sports health people, they will actually have machines that will help to calculate that. But you can calculate it just by measuring the waist and measuring the hips and then figuring out that ratio.
At some level, and it sounds like it's different for women than it is for men, the way they calculate it, because I've had my body mass index taken before, and I don't recall anyone checking my waist and my hips during the process.
Well, you might have been holding one of the mm-hmm. devices that calculates it. There are some different ways, but sometimes in the office when I'm seeing patients, I will measure their waist and measure their hips, and I have to have the paper in front of me to exactly, but you get a ratio, and then that gives you their just a rough estimate, and you know, and also taking into account, you know, how big the person's bones are. There's a lot of things that come into that, but it's a guideline. Mm-hmm. It's a guideline that people need to pay attention to.
Okay. So anyhow, Katie, we interrupted you yeah. here. We're talking about women's health here on No Limits, and you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. We were talking about obesity mm-hmm. and why it's a problem. And you'd mentioned that obviously it increases health care costs. Mm-hmm. What does it do to the people who are overweight? What
sure.
are the physical consequences?
It puts a lot of pressure on the person's body, on their heart. I think, you know, it reduces our energy levels. It increases maternal complications. It decreases fertility. It can lead to low birth weight babies. There's a lot of risks to mothers when you're looking at maternal obesity. And throughout the lifespan, it really just negatively impacts your health. Again, talking about the heart health and you know, the weight on your bones and your joints.
What does it do, Julie? I mean, is that the primary cause of heart disease, or what is the primary cause of heart disease among women these days?
Well, it can be a variety of things. It could be a person's high blood pressure. It could be obesity. And, of course, that factors in, you know, not just diet, but how much they exercise. And those factors, you know, can increase their risk.
What other factors are there that increase a person's chances? So far, we're focusing on heart. Julie Schneiders.
You know what? Heart disease, when I am seeing a patient and they tell me that their mother had a stroke, mm-hmm. or a heart event in their 40s or 50s, that is a red flag for me. Even if I'm sitting there looking at somebody that's totally fit, a runner, everything, we want to know what their lipid profile is. I mean, we're starting to check all of those kinds of things earlier so we can get on top of some of these risk factors that we can do something about.
What are the big risk factors then? And that might be a way. I'll throw that back to Katie.
Sure. I think one of the big ones that we focus on is smoking. Mm-hmm. Smoking is a major risk factor for heart disease, and it's definitely modifiable. And, you know, in the State Department of Health, through our Tobacco Prevention and Cessation Program, has a lot of programs available to help women and men to start with quitting.
What does, you know, to, without too graphically, mm-hmm. What does smoking do to a person's, you know, a woman's, since mm-hmm. we're talking primarily about women's health here, you know, to their lungs, to their heart, to mm-hmm. their bodies? Katie, I'll throw that one to you.
Well, I'm not the expert on smoking. I know kind of little bits about everything.
Okay.
So.
Well, Julie?
You know,
Schneiders.
Smoking and nicotine, it's known that it ruins the blood vessels. Okay, mm-hmm. so when you ruin the blood vessels in people, whether it be men or women, and you know, we're thinking about smoking cigarettes. There's women that chew tobacco also, so I want to just say about that. But it ruins their blood vessels. You ruin your blood vessels right there, you can increase blood pressure, you can have a stroke. Obviously, we know that's a risk for lung cancer. So it messes with your blood vessels, and we need for people to have a healthy blood pressure to keep their heart healthy. That is a big one. You know, they say if smoking went away, what do they say? 30% of all cancers would go away, and there's a high percentage of heart disease, and I'm forgetting that number right now. But yeah.
Well, and I'll throw this, Katie, as the custodian of the state's records. Mm-hmm. I mean, do we still have a smoking problem in this state? I mean,
absolutely.
What percentage do more
sure.
men than women smoke, or is it the opposite?
You know, I can tell you that about almost a 25% of women smoke in Indiana, and we are one of the worst states in the country still, and that number has not changed much over the years. And we also have a really high rate of pregnant mothers who are smoking, about 17%, and we know that.
That sounds like something actually that we ought to pick up. That,
yes.
That's a topic worth
sure.
worth further discussion. We are talking about women's health here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us 1-866-476-3881. My guests are Julie Schneiders, Katie Jones, and Julie Petter. I am John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about women's health. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Just before we went to the break, Katie, my guests, I should say, are Julie Schneiders, who is a St. Vincent nurse practitioner, Katie Jones, who is with the Indiana State Department of Health, and Julie Petter with the American Heart Association. You were talking about what smoking does to people, and we're about to start talking about, particularly about what it does to women who are pregnant, how it mm-hmm. can affect the pregnancies. Mm-hmm. That's important. I didn't want that to get cut
sure.
off by a break. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, we know that women who smoke, especially during pregnancy, it increases their risk for preterm delivery, stillbirth, high birth weight. We know that mothers who smoke tend to have 2 times the rate of low birth weight children, and also 2 times the rate of sudden infant death syndrome among their children, and 50% higher risk of miscarriage. And a lot of the low birth weight, preterm delivery, those are also really big factors when we look at infant mortality rates, which is also another really big priority for the State Department of Health at the moment.
And I'm presuming, obviously, smoking then, is that the number one risk factor in terms of women's health right now? I'm seeing silence is not good on radio, so I need someone to talk right now.
Yeah. You talk about smoking just for heart disease?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? It is certainly right up there. I would say it's probably one of the highest that is up there, along with, I mean, we have to look at that family history and their weight. It's kind of a combination, really.
Of the behavioral things, the things people can make
that
choices.
That you can fix, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the genetic thing, unless the science goes someplace
absolutely.
That it hasn't yet not land there, will be ethical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ethical considerations there. What are the other big, we've identified smoking, what are the other big mistakes or things that women do that put their health at risk? Julie Petter.
Well, not exercising is a big one. Obviously, we want women to get out and exercise at least 30 minutes a day. And then, of course, diet is another contributor towards heart disease. Trying to get people to eat healthy, more fruits and vegetables, less fat.
What sorts of things, Julie Petter, should people be eating? If you're going to do a heart-healthy diet, what's the recommendation?
Well, we want more fruits and more vegetables. We want more fish, and we want more lean meats with less fat. I hear this a lot, to try to stay on the outside of the grocery store so that you're getting fresh ingredients and not having things that have high sodium. Trying to stay away from salt in the diet is a big one.
And then in terms of things that people should avoid altogether. I mean, there's I don't know whether it's a folktale or whatever, that red wine is supposed to be good for your heart. Is that
true.
The case? It is true?
True.
Well, you've made a lot of people happy.
True.
Why is it good for you?
There are flavonoids in wine, in red wine, and actually it's in all wines, that have been proven to be good for the heart. So for women, it's 1 4-ounce glass at night, and men get 2. That always kind of ticks me off, but it has to do with the way that wine is metabolized in the liver. So for women, and we're going to talk about this at the WFYI day on Friday, because Anthem has partnered with WFYI to look at, have a happy, healthy heart, and we want women to know about all of the things that they can do. One of those is consuming a glass of red wine.
Are there, and this is, Katie, this is a question I'm getting interested by, the idea of who is at risk here. Are there demographic breakdowns or whatever of women who tend to be more at risk because of these behaviors? Could you talk a little bit about that, who might be at risk? First, are there certain groups that are more at risk than others?
Sure, and it depends on the different health condition that we're talking about, obviously. But we found that there are a lot of racial and ethnic disparities when it comes to a lot of the health issues, except for smoking. Interestingly, white women tend to have higher levels of smoking rates than African-American women. But when we look at obesity and overweight, it tends to be women who are Black, women who have lower levels of education. And I think some of those kind of run kind of across the board. But it's not always that way. So,
well, yeah, Julie Schneiders.
You know what else, too, is when women carry their weight in the middle, okay, that fat that just hangs around the heart, versus maybe people that carry their weight more, you know, below their waist. But when you start to carry the weight right here in the middle, that is a bigger risk factor for women, because that is that visceral fat that just is, you see more diabetes. There's something called metabolic syndrome, and that's where the diabetes, the high blood pressure, is kind of the perfect storm for women to have, like heart disease. People don't realize that, you know, when you're obese, a lot of times that's when diabetes creeps in. And when diabetes creeps in, then what do we have? We have microvascular little blood vessel problems going on, and that's where some of the stroke and the heart stuff comes in. So
we've gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. It says, how much collaboration do any of the groups have with nutrition groups or fresh produce companies to reach lower income families or women? Who wants to take that one? Well, Katie, I think they're both looking at you. So,
well, definitely, I'm not from the Division of Nutrition and Physical Activity, but that's a lot of the work that they do is, you know, building those relationships, working with community groups, trying to, you know, there's kind of a limit to what we can do with policy, but a lot of the community groups that we work with do try to build some policy with organizations, businesses, to increase the healthy fare in more accessible places for families that might not have access to a healthy supermarket.
How much success have you had with that? Or I guess I should say we have had, because it's a collective effort. How much success have we had? You mentioned, for example, earlier that the smoking rates among women are 25%, and they've pretty much stayed there. I know there was a decline probably 20, 25 years ago, but it's like there's a floor you can't get past right now. How much success have we had in other areas?
Well, I think that the successes are happening. You know, there was a statewide smoking ban that went into place, I think, was it just over a year ago? And I think that we're going to see some really positive effects from that. I think that we're starting to see some small changes in communities. I think in Indianapolis, we're starting to see kind of where we have some food deserts. I think we're starting to see, you know, CVS's and Walgreens putting in some fruit and vegetable programs there. And I think that that's really, really going to benefit our population that really, you know, need that. And so I think that a lot of the steps that we're taking now, we probably haven't seen the results from them yet. But I think in the years to come, we're really going to start seeing some really positive impacts.
Julie Schneiders.
And do you think, I also think about the farmers markets that are everywhere, that are popping up, that you see, you know, people out there buying fresh, you know, I eat my way through the farmer's market. I don't know. I might be the one that can make the farmer's market unhealthy. But I'm thinking there's an effort there. You see some of the organic farmers all together, because I've had some patients come in who actually are part of that, where they get greens, you know, they pick them up on a weekly basis through the good growing season. So I think that some of that effort, but again, I think it needs to be spread to all walks of life.
Well, and I guess what I'm wondering, though, is those are probably, and we do see them in the city, do we see them, though, in poor neighborhoods?
Right.
Do we
mm-hmm.
see them in places that, at least from what I hear Katie saying, mm-hmm. are the ones that are most at risk mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. most affected?
Mm-hmm. I can address that a little bit.
Julie Petter, yeah.
I do know the Heart Association is working now on teaching gardens. Mm-hmm. We know that kids and students are more apt to eat healthy vegetables if they are familiar with them and know what they look like and have and know what it's involved to grow them. So we're working with inner city schools, schools that have high populations of folks that don't have access to fresh fruits and
vegetables.
Are you
doing that here in Indianapolis?
Yes, we are.
Which
mm-hmm.
schools are you working with?
Well, we have one coming up that will be opening soon in Skiles Test, which is in Lawrence. That'll be coming in the fall. And then through a foundation grant, we were able to do five IPS schools last year. So that's something new and kind of exciting to try to get kids excited about fruits and vegetables. We work with schools on a two-year program.
Yeah, come talk to my son after we're done with that, and we'll see if we can get it done. But I guess the other part of that, Julie, and this sounds fascinating, how do you assess the impact of that? I mean, it's one thing. How do you figure out whether it worked or not, whether, you know, to use a bad metaphor
sure.
here, whether this effort to get children to get excited about fruits and vegetables actually took root?
Well, you may remember, I know I did, back before people recycled. When the schools got the kids excited with that, all of a sudden, mom and dad can't throw something in the garbage can without having that awareness. One of the parts of the program is that the students are able to learn about healthy eating and then in conjunction take the produce home to their families. So I think it's just kind of exponential as far as...
Are you tracking, though, to see how effective it has been, or...?
You know, that's a good question, and I don't have the answer to that on how it's being tracked. I would assume it is.
Okay. We are talking about women's health here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, what I'm picking up a theme here that, and actually I'm going to save that for later. I think probably at some level we may have scared a lot of people out there, and that may be a good thing here, talking about, you know, if you're a woman and you're thinking, oh gosh, I don't know what my body mass index is, and yes, I've got a little bit of weight around my middle, am I going to keel over immediately, or what steps should I take mm-hmm. if I want to change this, if I want to reduce my risk? Julie Schneiders, how should you start?
I think you have to start. I mean, that is the one thing. I think that women take care of everybody else except themselves. So they'll get their family all fixed, but they don't take care of themselves. So accessing, you know, there are many health fairs around that you can get your body mass index figured out. So I always say know your numbers. They can prick your finger, find out what your cholesterol is. So that's a place to start. If you have a healthcare provider, obviously, hopefully you're going to be able to go, you know, for a yearly exam. So you know your numbers. But I think if you know your numbers, then that's a place that you can start. And then trying to educate yourself about healthy food choices. That I think is really most of the battle, is what you're able to put in your mouth. And I say simple things, you know, everybody always says drink water. That's so true. I always tell patients, if you cannot drink sugary drinks for a whole year, and that's the only thing you change, you will lose 15 pounds. That's a simple thing. Okay. So I just think, but knowing your numbers and knowing and all of your risk factors, and then one thing at a time. I don't think you can change all of this all at once. So it's going to be a process. It's going to be a lifestyle choice.
So it sounds like first thing is presumably if you're smoking, figure out some way to stop, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is start looking at some of these diet particulars. What's a good way? Exercise, I think Julie Petter mentioned, is important, 30 minutes a day. What sort of exercise should women be doing? I mean, what's a good place to start? I'm presuming you're not talking about running a marathon.
That's good.
Yeah. I think even just starting with walking every day, take the steps instead of the elevator. I think the perception is that women feel like if they can't get to the gym and they can't get a full hour workout session in, then, you know, they don't do anything. Start simple with walking every day.
Sorry.
Yes, okay.
I was just going to add, the best exercise is the one that you're going to do and stick with.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely agree. You don't have to go to a gym.
I always say you need a pair of tennis shoes. If you get your hands on a pedometer, 10,000 steps, and if you wear it at work, mm-hmm. 10,000 steps is enough for actual weight loss. Okay, mm-hmm. So many people have jobs where they're up and moving around. They get 5,000 done at work. And so then they've got to walk 5,000 more steps. And so that kind of helps them to kind of keep track of that. But you don't even have to walk fast. Just walk.
We've gotten an email from a listener. And if you'd like to connect with us by using email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. This is from Lisa. And she says, please don't recommend red wine for all women. Any amount of alcohol, even one serving per day, increases the risk of breast cancer. Women should talk to their doctor and discuss family history before deciding on a glass of wine every day.
She is correct in that, but it has been studied that red wine does help with prevention of heart disease. She is talking about breast cancer issues.
Mm-hmm. Is there a connection between red wine?
There has been not just red wine, but alcohol consumption for women that is too much alcohol there's an increased risk of breast cancer. Now, there's lots of different studies on that, the way people have looked at that. But when you're looking at heart health, mm-hmm. a glass of red wine is good for your heart. And so when we look at the number one reason that women die, it's heart disease. But we are certainly not saying for everybody to go out and, you know, drink lots and lots of wine, because again, too much of anything, too much alcohol is not what we're promoting here. We're just saying a glass of red wine, the flavonoids, good for the heart. And we've got a cardiologist that's going to be coming to WFYI that will be addressing and talking about that.
How much, when you say too much alcohol, how do we define too much alcohol
on a daily basis? I can tell you from being a clinician for a lot of years, that's a tricky question. Mm-hmm. When patients come in, you will say, do you drink alcohol? Yes. How much? Well, you know, just social, just sort of, kind of. Everybody has a different definition of that. I will tell you that when people tell me they drink a glass of wine a day, I'm okay with that. When they start to say maybe two or three, as clinicians, we always are like, usually that means that it might be more than that, okay? So that's too much. And especially if you're talking about, you know, hard alcohol. So again, I always try to be diligent about my health history taking and trying to find out exactly what. Because alcoholism for women is a whole nother show, you mm-hmm. know, that we could, you know, talk about. So, yeah.
We are talking about women's health here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Alex, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I have kind of a question regarding a debate I've been kind of having with my friends. You know, as a teenager, we talk a lot about wanting to lose weight and look good. And so I have a question for anyone who wants to answer it. Is it more important to be, you know, losing weight or kind of maintaining a fit and healthy lifestyle? And in order to do that, is it better to be doing, you know, a lot of exercise, cardiovascular exercise, or to be maintaining a really strict, you know, healthy kind of eating diet? Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Alex, and the question. Julie.
Alex, I think that's a great question. I am not a dietitian, but I can tell you that in working with dietitians, they really feel like it's what you're putting in your mouth. And you use the word strict diet. I like to think of just different choices, because I think in reality, we're all going to like chow on a brownie every once in a while. But I think that just healthy choices. Yes, exercise is a big, it's a piece of that that I think you're going to definitely feel better. But I think when it comes down to really losing weight, it's what you're putting in your mouth.
Diet matters. We are talking about women's health here on No Limits. I am John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about women's health today on No Limits in advance of the Women, Wisdom, and Wellness Conference on Friday. My guests are Julie Schneiders, a St. Vincent nurse practitioner, Katie Jones of the Indiana State Department of Health, and Julie Petter of the American Heart Association. Given that there's this conference coming up, and we're going to be talking, a lot of the issues we've been talking about here are going to be discussed in greater length there. Julie, you're going to be speaking at that conference. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be talking about?
Yes, we have a great day planned. We will open up with a cardiologist. Dr. Nancy Branius will be coming from St. Vincent, and she is a cardiologist, an electrophysiologist. She has lots of titles. But anyway, we're going to be talking about heart health and what simple things that you can do on a daily basis to keep your heart healthy. She will be very interesting. There's also going to be breakout sessions. We have Katie Thomas from St. Vincent's. It's going to be, she is a wellness guru, and she's going to be talking about what does it really mean to be well? And she has a very interesting twist to that. We also have some gynecologists talking, because a lot of women use their primary source of physicians are gynecologists. So we have a panel of gynecologists going to talk. And then there's, you know, discussions on financial health. There's all different choices for depending on what you think that you need. The lunch speaker is Linda Larson, who is a national speaker, who is really talking about women thinking that they have to be that superhero, and that we overdo every day of our lives, and we really have too much on our list, and we would probably keep ourselves a little bit healthier if we could just kind of slow down a minute.
And as we've talked today, one of the things that I've heard is that I don't think we've stated it explicitly, but is that idea of wellness, that rather than attempting to fix the problem after it has manifested itself, it's better to anticipate it. Presumably, we've got some things in place, Katie, at the state level, where we're trying to encourage women to do that.
Sure. I think, it's never too late to reverse some of these risk factors. And I think that any step that we take in a direction of wellness is definitely going to help our health outcomes. The Department of Health is big, and we have a lot of different programs doing a lot of really great work. And it would be like Julie said on the other topic, it would be an entire show to talk about all of those. But our focus right now at the Department of Health for this next year is really on adult obesity, reducing that number, smoking cessation, trying to bring that number down, and reducing our rate of infant mortality.
How much of that is targeted specifically by gender, though? The other thing that we're getting out of this program is that, well, obviously, there are health risks for both men and women. They're not necessarily the same risks.
Mm-hmm. Sure, and I think that's why we have the Office of Women's Health, so that we can always keep a gender focus on all of our priorities at the State Department of Health. And I think that, I'm at the table for those discussions to help set our direction. The infant mortality specifically is really focused on women's health, and we're really trying to approach it from a wellness standpoint in terms of how can we take care of our bodies, before pregnancy, in between pregnancies, so that we're having a healthy pregnancy. So that's going to be a big focus too.
And that actually takes me to another side of this, I guess, is that, the one male in this conversation. We tend to think of health in isolation as a personal responsibility, when in fact, particularly in family and partnership situations, it's not. I mean, you have to be somewhat supportive. What can women's life partners do to help promote healthier lifestyles, the part of the women that they care about? I'm going to start with Julie Petter on that one.
Well, I would think encouraging their loved ones to just get out and exercise every day, even just by walking, to get to the doctor so they know their numbers, so they can manage their cholesterol, they know what their blood pressure numbers are. So if they are one of those women who are doing everything right, but maybe due to genetics have high cholesterol or high blood pressure, they can talk to their doctor about what their options are. So encourage them to get to the doctor. And then also the healthy diet in the home.
Julie Schneiders.
You know, at the WFYI day on Friday, there will be several booths set up that you can get your blood sugar, cholesterol numbers, all of that can be checked. So that's just
So buy your life partner a ticket to the event.
Yeah. tell him to buy you a ticket to come to this.
Katie, I'm going to let you have a crack at that one, too.
Well, I don't think it's not just the partner. I mean, I think that
children.
I think it's an entire family effort. I think that you know, as parents, we model the behaviors that we hope to instill in our children, and I think that you know, it has to be kind of a family effort. Everyone has to support each other in it. And I think I agree with everything that Julie said. You know, I've always found that I exercise more when I have someone to work with or work out with. And so, you know, when my partner started running with me, I got a little bit more competitive, and I was more willing to do it. So just having someone there as a support is so important. And I think, you know, women always take care of other people before they take care of themselves. So so support and taking care of the other people in your lives, you know, making sure that those are shared responsibilities, too.
We are talking about women's health here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've talked about some changes, like I think it was Katie who mentioned the smoking ban, statewide smoking ban, and the effect that might have. In terms of big scale, I'm gonna make all of you, each of you, a ruler of all she surveys here for a few minutes. What is the biggest change we could make as a culture that would improve the health for the most women? I'll start with Julie Schneiders on that one.
I think access to health care. I think access to, when I think about women, and I have women that come into my office who have not been to a physician, any physician, nothing, for 10 years. Why? Because they're too busy. Why? Because they couldn't do it. Why? Because they don't have insurance. So I'm going to say access to care and making that easy, because women are busy. But they are the ones, and once we get them in, then they're going to be bringing their family in, because they usually are the ones making the health decisions for their family.
So starting with access to health care,
mm-hmm.
One form or another. Katie.
And I'm going to stick with that theme of access to healthy fruits and vegetables, access to healthier foods. We talked quite a bit about that earlier in the show, but making sure that there's equal access for people all throughout our state to be able to not just afford or find, but you know how to cook and make healthy meals and safe ways to get these fruits and vegetables into their homes too. So access, affordability, and availability.
We did a show a little while back on food deserts that stressed that theme, that the areas where people couldn't get not just fresh food, but even healthy food, that, you know, that all of the stuff that they would get at a convenience store or whatever would be, you know, microwavable, mm-hmm. just to... How big a problem is that for us, and how, I guess I'm going to keep you, allow you still to be ruler of all, how would you solve it? I'll talk for a second so you can collect your thoughts here.
Well, it's a good question, and I don't know that we've quite figured that out yet, and I'm not the expert on food deserts to be able to really answer that effectively, but, you know, I think that it's a good start. You know, they're taking the SNAP cards now at farmers markets, which was a really great improvement. You know, we're starting to see a lot more fresh fruit options in a lot of our convenience stores. And I think making sure that public transportation is available and not just available, but
affordable,
and efficient for families, too.
Okay. And Julie Petter, I'm going to let you again also be ruler of all you survey. How do we improve women's health?
Well, I agree with both Katie and Julie, but the other thing that can be done is just education. One of my volunteers said at the Go Red for Women luncheon last year that in real estate, everything is location, location, location. With heart disease, it really is education, education, education. We know that heart disease is the number one killer of women. We know it causes 1 in 3 deaths. Yet most women don't have it on their radar screen. Mm-hmm. They don't know the signs and symptoms. So that when they are
or
having,
if they do, it's they're paying attention because of the men in their lives or whatever.
Right. They're very less apt to call 911. They wait too long to ask for help. And then by the time they get to the emergency room, so much damage has been done to their heart that it's irreversible. So raising awareness about the signs, the symptoms, and the good news is that for 80% of the instances, it's preventable. So if we can do things like having them have access to medical attention and improving diet and exercise, that'll all help.
We are talking about women's health here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what this listener did, Kenny, who sent us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Says the most fundamental human right for any woman anywhere is for her to choose whether or not she will birth a child. Indiana is a state, among others, attempting to deny women their own conscious choices in reproductive health. You seem to be skirting around this defining issue of women's health in favor of discussing weight, smoking, etc., that could equally affect men or women. What about this? Well,
that's a different show.
It is a different,
it is a different,
different
show.
Yeah. It is a different show. But to some degree, I guess, and I'll reframe Kenny's question ever so slightly here, the issue really is about being able to control their own bodies. Is that, you know, is that a health decision for women?
Julie? I think access, I'm going to go back to my what would I do to kind of fix, whether we're talking about health disease or heart disease or whatever, but I think access to care for women is the way that I'm going to look at anything that women need to be taken care of. So that's how I'm going to answer that question.
We are talking about women's health here on No Limits. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly. What's your question?
I know this is a broad topic, but I am just wondering if you all can speak about the art of breastfeeding. I know it is quite a health concern for women and children and the family as a whole, so I was just wondering what we all could be doing to educate, I guess, all women and, you know, young mothers about breastfeeding, because it is, I'm a new mother myself, and it's just, it's not prevalent, I feel like, in our schools and everything. So and what could we do to for that to, you know, spread the word and to help with our family's health?
Well, before I let you go and get an answer to your question, congratulations, Sarah, on the birth
Thank
of your
you.
Child. Certainly. Thanks very much for the call. Well, breastfeeding, Julie Schneiders.
You know, I come from a hospital where this is breastfeeding is promoted. There's lactation consultants all over the place. So it is very much an initiative that St. Vincent promotes. And really, I think all of the hospitals, it's gotten a lot of press here in this week because I think it was National Breastfeeding Week. And I'm involved where we are actually going to build a women's center that is going to have bathrooms that is for moms to be able to have a place to, if they need to feed their child. But again, I think kind of going back with what Julie and Katie have said, education is the key to that and helping women understand how all of that works, what they need to be doing. But I also want to say this, too. If that doesn't work for a mom, I never like for a new mom to feel guilty that maybe breastfeeding did not work out for her, because there is formula. Not everybody wants to hear me say that, but I always like to work with each person in each woman individually. But to her point, I think she brings up a good point. But I think that when you have your good prenatal care in place, there should be education happening there. And then once you get into the hospital, because there's nothing like learning that once that baby is there, and that's where the lactation programs at all of the hospitals exist that are really good, and follow up for once they go home, because that's where a lot of the issues come up.
Well, and I'm going to pick up on something you just said and bring us back to sort of our general overarching subject here. How much of this is also about women, and to some degree, I guess, all human beings, taking some of the pressure off of themselves? It seems to me that with a lot of these things, people get so anxious that that becomes a reason for failure in and of itself, that, you know, they go out and realize, oh, I can't run 5 miles the first time out, so I'm not going to try, or, you know, I didn't lose 5 pounds on the first day of my diet. You know, what's a healthy way to approach taking more control over your health and how you maintain it? Katie, I'll start with you.
Well, when I think of making a health change or improving my health in any way, I always think of slow and steady wins the race, and that, you know, a diet isn't going to do it. It's a lifestyle choice. It's, you know, it's a conscious effort to improve the way that you're eating or to increase your physical activity. And it's building it into your life so that it's not just something that 6 months down the road is easy to just let fall off.
Julie Petter, same question. I mean, in terms of taking the pressure off.
Well, I agree with what Julie had said earlier, that you can't do everything at once. To try to just tackle one problem at a time, whether it be drinking water and eliminating the sugary drinks out of your diet, whether it be just walking every day, which is free, and anybody can do it, just starting small.
And Julie, I'll let you have kind of the last word here. What is a good practical first step for someone who says, you know, I do want to turn things around. I want to take a little more control over my health if I'm a woman.
I'm going to say that as a woman, you need to realize that you are so important. You are so important to everybody that you are around, especially your family. Your family is looking up to you. So sitting there and thinking, okay, today it's going to be a me day, and there needs to be probably a me hour or a me 15 minutes, a me 5 minutes every day so that you can really focus, because, again, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint here. We want you to really look at your life, no matter what your age is right this second, all the way up until you're elderly. Take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. I can't say that enough. And really look at know your numbers, and you've got to start somewhere and start easy and slow.
That will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Julie Schneiders, Katie Jones, and Julie Petter. I am John Kroll. We'll be back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about campus security. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.